You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Two immigrant families, the Toros, originally from Panama, and the Riveras, who've just arrived from Mexico, are at the center of Cristina Henriquez's latest novel, The Book of Unknown Americans. Alma and Arturo Rivera have relocated to Newark, Delaware, to enroll their teenage daughter Maribel, who has suffered a traumatic brain injury, in a highly respected local special needs school. And the Toros and Riveras become neighbors, later friends, but are split by tragedy after the Toros' 16-year-old son, Mayor, falls in love with Maribel. This is Cristina Henriquez's second novel. Her first was The World in Half. She's also the author of a story collection called Come Together, Fall Apart. The book is published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Newark, Delaware isn't the first place I'd imagine an immigrant from Central or South America or Puerto Rico would want to relocate to, but didn't your father move there from Panama in 1971?
He did. My father came, as you said, in 1971 to study chemical engineering at the University of Delaware, and the way he always tells it is that he knew about Delaware partly because they have a canal and Panama has a canal, so he thought of them as sister regions. But the University of Delaware has a very good chemical engineering program, and then he ended up meeting my mom somewhere along the way and has stayed ever since. So he's been here for more than 40 years.
Is there a large immigrant community there?
There is, which is surprising to people. As I was writing this book, a lot of people asked me when I would mention that it was set in Delaware, you know, why Delaware of all places? But there actually is. And part of the reason is because there are mushroom farms just across the state line in Pennsylvania, and they get a lot of immigrant labor. So then people end up living in Delaware where it's a little bit cheaper to actually live. And then, you know, it has sort of grown from there.
Although I'm sure when you tell people you come from Newark, they assume we're talking about New Jersey.
Yeah. I mean, in Delaware, I guess the way we pronounce it is Newark. So that's the differentiating factor. If I say Newark, then maybe they think New Jersey, Newark, Delaware, yeah.
Were you inspired to write this novel by stories your father told you about how and why he'd come to the United States?
Not so much about stories that he told me. It was more inspired by kind of witnessing up close his life and his struggles with being here. I mean, he loves the United States. He loves his life here. And he often will say that he has two homes, one in the United States and one in Panama. You know, but I've been able to see firsthand growing up with him kind of still the challenges that he faces. You know, he's self-conscious about his accent sometimes, or he feels maybe like people here don't fully understand him or fully kind of get him. And so just that sense of dislocation was something that I think I grew up thinking a lot about. And I moved around a lot as a kid, too. So that was also part of it.
I'm sure another reason is your mother worked as a translator in the local school district with families who'd come to the United States from Latin America.
Yeah. So I would hear a lot of those stories, you know, just in kind of loose ways.
Most of them came here, I assume, hoping to provide better opportunities for their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of them, like the family in the book, were looking specifically for a certain education system. Some of them are looking for medical attention for their kids, who then ended up in the school district where my mom is a translator. You know, people come for all variety of reasons, and I wanted to kind of honor that idea of just these ordinary stories of people coming to the United States and why they come and what their life is like once they're here.
Is that why you've chosen to tell a story in first person through the voices of 11 different narrators?
Yeah, 11 different narrators was a challenge.
Was that your idea from the start?
It was. I wanted to kind of give this chorus of voices, so to speak. So all the narrators that you mentioned, and they all live in one apartment building in Delaware. And I really felt very strongly that it was important to give each of them at one point a chance to tell their story. So there's two main narrators to the book, but the other nine narrators each get a chance for about two or three pages to say something.
The challenge for a writer is to find that many distinctive voices.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, I'm one person. I have limited range, limited capabilities, but I tried really hard, and I did research to figure out different colloquialisms and customs that I could weave into each of the narratives. And you know, in subtle ways, I think they do all sound different and each have their own voice.
You've said that you hear voices in your head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about some serious psychological problem or the problem of a writer who's constantly thinking about how her characters would speak?
It's more of the latter, for sure. I mean, maybe that's up for debate, but no,
keeping them straight?
No, but it is true that, I mean, I'm a very voice-driven writer, and so I just hear those and I glom onto them, and it's, you know, that's something that's easy for me usually to translate to the page.
You said that two characters have the most pages here. They are Alma Rivera, Maribel's mother, and Meyer Toro, who lives in the same apartment building down the hall with his family. The actions of both these characters end up being driven by their love for Maribel, even though they love her in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they manifest in different ways, for sure.
We learn early in the story that Maribel suffered a brain injury after a fall from a ladder. What happened, and why does Alma feel so much guilt over it?
Alma feels that she is to blame to some degree for that accident. She was the one holding the ladder at the time that Maribel climbs up, and she has just carried this guilt with her all this time, and she feels now like it's her responsibility to make it up to her and to sort of make her daughter whole again, whatever that might mean, and that's something that changes in definition over the course of the book.
That would be possible by moving to Newark, Delaware?
Well, the doctors in Mexico have told them earlier in the book that there are certain schools and that if she can get the right kind of attention, that, yeah, her brain basically can heal.
Meyer falls in love with Maribel the first time he sees her shopping at a local dollar store. He's drawn to her because she's very, very beautiful.
Yeah, she is very beautiful. And he knows, I think, that maybe, or he says at one point, that in a different life he might not get a chance with her.
But how long is it before he realizes that she's cognitively impaired?
It's pretty early on. And so he is initially attracted to her because she's, as you said, very beautiful. But then he's sort of put off by that fact of learning what she is going through. But then, you know, he starts to talk to her. And Mayor himself is a little bit of an outcast, a little bit of a misfit. And so I think he recognizes and sees something in Maribel that he understands and can relate to.
You've described Mayor as a nerd. His father sees him as a failure because mm-hmm. he's not athletic like his older brother, Enrique. And Mayor has few friends. His high school classmates pick on him, call him Pan, which is a slur for Panamanian. Does that happen to Panamanian kids? Did that happen to you?
It happened to me, yes. Yeah.
And you also said that he's the character in the book who's the most like you. Were you a nerd in high school?
I'm still a nerd, I think. but yeah, I mean, he's like me in some ways. There's a line in particular in the book where he says, I mean, he was born in Panama but grew up in the United States, and he thinks of himself as American. I was born in the United States, you know, but have this dual identity of being half Panamanian. And he says something at one point about how he doesn't feel like he can claim the thing he's supposed to and doesn't really claim the thing he's supposed to feel, like just this duality in him. And that is something that definitely comes directly from me, that line. So,
my guest is Christina Henriquez, who's the author of the story collection Come Together, Fall Apart, which was a New York Times Editor's Choice selection, also the novel The World in Half. Do you go back and forth between writing short stories and novels?
Yeah. I think I'm really a short story writer at heart. I just love the form of short stories. And even this novel, which is really a novel, is kind of a short story writer's way of writing a novel, I think.
Because you have 11 narrators.
I have all these narrators. So I wrote, you know, one story that was an arc, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, but then I interspersed it with all these short character portraits, which for me worked kind of as lily pads as I was writing, so I could hop from one to the next, and it was a way to get through a novel.
We never hear directly from Maribel. We learn only about her from the observations and reactions of the people around her. Did you experiment with allowing her to speak for herself, kind of like Faulkner did with Sound and Fury?
I didn't think about it as much as, in retrospect, maybe I should have, actually. There are sections, though, where She keeps a notebook to partly to keep herself organized. And there are short sections where Mayor reads some of those notebook entries. So I felt like readers would at least get her voice a little bit through that.
I've spoken to a friend who actually suffered from a brain injury, and she says your descriptions of Maribel and the brain injury are exactly on the mark. How did you come to understand brain injury and the recovery process?
Well, that's very gratifying to hear. I did some research. I mean, actually, the main thing I did, this is a little bit strange, but I watched videos on YouTube of people with brain injuries who were talking about the experience of having brain injuries. So not only to read and know on a factual level what, you know, the ramifications of it would be, but to hear how they talk, to hear how they process things was important to me.
They live in this apartment building that is owned by a Paraguayan immigrant, Fito Angelino. He came to the United States with the dream of becoming a professional boxer. Uh-huh. Boxers also often experience brain injuries.
That's true, yes. Yeah, I didn't make that connection, actually, but yeah, that is true.
The building's residents are from Nicaragua, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, as well as Panama and Mexico. They all speak Spanish, but it's very different Spanish, isn't it?
Yes, and there's even, I think there is a part even where one of the Panamanian characters says something about how she feels a camaraderie with one of the Venezuelan characters because they speak a similar Spanish. You know, I mean, they're all understandable to each other. But that was one of the other hopes for me was I think people have this idea of Latinos as being one mass of humanity, and I really wanted to individualize them through their narratives.
And they really can hear the subtle differences.
Yeah,
I remember,
for sure.
I remember being in a Chicago store, Chicano store, with somebody who came from Spain but had lived many years in Mexico, and she said, I'm going to talk to him in my Mexican accent. Mm-hmm. He looked at her almost immediately and said, "You're not from Mexico."
Yeah, I mean, when I go to Panama, I can. That's where I'm comfortable. That's the, you know, Spanish that I'm used to hearing is Panamanian Spanish. And then when I am elsewhere, I can hear the difference too.
Your title, "The Book of Unknown Americans," might lead some readers to assume that the immigrants you've written about here are all eventually become American citizens. But that's not the case. Are you saying that U.S. citizens aren't the only Americans?
It was very important to me to include the word Americans in the title of the book. And my reasoning or my thought behind that was that the characters in the book identify themselves as American. And I thought it was an interesting and potent question. You know, can you claim a space as your own even if other people don't want you to claim that space? So to them, they're Americans. And that was what was important to me, and I wanted that in the title.
I was once chided in Mexico by someone who said, I'm a North American just like you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a loaded term. Yeah, American to anyone in South America, North America. Yeah.
Some of your characters describe feeling invisible. Did your father or other immigrants you've spoken with feel like that?
I think to some degree. I don't know. I can't say for sure for my father. I haven't asked him that specific question. But I do think that that's a general feeling among people. You know, that in a way that they're very conspicuous because they're in the middle of, you know, at the heart of a heated debate right now in this country, but at the same time that people look right past them.
One of your characters says that the people he meets don't want to get to know him because it's easier just to hate him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a very, like, politically charged section of the book. The only politically charged part, perhaps, where I was overtly saying something that I think, you know, I feel very deeply and believe in very deeply.
Well, since we are a nation of immigrants, are you surprised by how heated the debate over immigration is today?
I mean, I do think people have a short memory. Yeah. You know, but what was important to me and what was really interesting to me is not necessarily, to me, immigration is a system, you know, it's a political system. And I didn't write a book, I didn't feel, about immigration. I wrote a book about immigrants. And that was really important to me, the human stories behind the debate.
Is that what your next work will also be about?
I don't know yet. That's a good question.
Are you writing short stories?
I'm writing some short stories, and I don't think that they're going to tackle this kind of head-on in the same way. I'm going to sort of move to a different territory.
Christina Henriquez, her latest book, The Book of Unknown Americans, it's published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.